From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. History. America is making it right now. Barack Obama has enough delegates to clinch the Democratic nomination, and Hillary Clinton is figuring out her next move. We're done with the long march of the primaries, and if you thought that was tough stuff, watch out for the general election. For her views on what lies ahead, we've got Congresswoman Maxine Waters from the 35th District of California. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
So let me start out with you. In January, we spoke to you about your support of Senator Clinton. Here's what you said.
I think that for me, Hillary is a policy wonk. I am focused on public policy, and I'm thinking about action and thinking about what people say, how they present themselves, and whether or not they sound really credible on hardcore concrete ideas and proposals. And she just emerges as that person for me.
So, Congresswoman, why did you change your mind?
Combination of things. We've been through a campaign period. Barack Obama has paid some dues, and he's revealed himself. We got to know a bit more about him. He's talking about issues. The campaign has done what campaigns are supposed to do, and that is to help the public get to know the candidate, what they stand for, what they're willing to do, and whether or not they're tough enough to stay the course. He has met the test. He's paid his dues. He's got the numbers, and he should be the nominee.
Now, we saw a lot of members of the Congressional Black Caucus either switch their superdelegate vote or at the last minute declare when they were undeclared. What do you think that was about? Why was there this, you know, even before the final election votes were in, why was there this rush to say, you know, to declare?
I don't know that there were a lot of members now. I was out of pocket in Los Angeles in my own campaign yesterday. But as I understand it, it was Mr. Clyburn and myself. Were there more that were announced?
There were.
Who were they?
Jefferson, and I don't have a full list, but there were some other people who did declare.
Well, I was not aware that there had been a big rush yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, not, it's not just among the CBC, although there were other members besides yourselves, but also in general. You saw this this momentum. Do you think that there's an effort to really try to pull together around the presumptive nominee and to
Well, first of all, you know, elected officials and politicians are pretty much realist, and he had the numbers. And he, again, had demonstrated that he could put together a campaign, put together the delegates, and he was there. He was right there, and those delegate numbers approved. That he had done the work that he needed to do to get that kind of support. And so it makes good sense for people to start to pull together and say, let's move forward and take this government back.
When you talk about pulling together, you still have a candidate in the race by the name of Senator Hillary Clinton. She has not dropped out. What do you want her role to be?
Well, it's not what I want her role to be. It's what the two can get together and decide about what her role will be. I think they need some room to breathe. I think that they need some time to talk. She obviously brought to the table some constituencies that are going to be needed in order to win the presidency. Obviously, there are a lot of women out there who were just as excited about her as others were about Barack Obama, and they need to make sure that they're feeling comfortable that she's had her say and she's been dealt with. So I think it's a matter of days, and they'll get together and they'll begin to work this out.
Would you like to see her as the vice president?
I think that's up to the nominee to determine who his vice president will be. Certainly, I think she brings some things to the table that would be great for a team. As I indicated, there are a lot of women out there who would like to see her play some significant role, perhaps as vice president. She obviously went into the rural communities and whipped up some small town votes. And so I think she does bring something to the table that would cause her to be considered. And I think she will be considered by Barack Obama. So now they have to get together and work it out and see if it works for them.
When you think about this race, you have so many people who are so emotionally invested, both people in the political community, but certainly American citizens. What would you say to someone, yourself as a stalwart Democrat, who said, as many people have said, Oh, you know what? I'm not going to vote for Obama. I'm going to vote for McCain. I'm a Hillary supporter. I can't stomach voting for Obama.
Well, what the first thing I think is that it is time for people to focus on the issues, the core issues of the Democratic Party. What do we stand for? Who do we really represent? And that's how you measure your candidates. I don't think anybody that focuses on the history of the party and how we have evolved and what our issues are and the leadership of our party, who could vote for McCain. And so I think the more we talk about getting out of Iraq, the more we talk about making education right and getting rid of this failed policy of leave no child behind, the more we talk about we've got to have universal health care, the more we talk about creating jobs and making sure we deal with global warming, people are going to, you know, get out of any discomfort that they may have for the most part and focus on where they want this country to go if they're really Democrats. Now, if they're not really Democrats, then they won't be there. But I think that we have enough Democrats to win back this presidency and to move forward with a new agenda.
Well, Congresswoman, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
That was Democratic U.S. Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She represents the 35th District of California. And now let's turn to the big picture and crunch some numbers with NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving. Hey, Ron.
Good to be with you, Farai.
Is there enough news for you right now?
Enough numbers to crunch?
Yeah, exactly. So give us some of that campaign math.
Well, it's pretty interesting that after watching for weeks and weeks while both of the candidates crept up and up and up in terms of their totals, yesterday you saw a real breakthrough, not so much in terms of the pledged delegates. There were only 31 pledged delegates at stake in South Dakota and Montana, but in terms of the superdelegate rush. And Maxine Waters, whom you've just been speaking to, was part of this by switching, of course, from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama. She took one away from one stack and put one on the other. But there were more than 50 people around the country, about a quarter of the total of superdelegates yet uncommitted, who came out during yesterday, during one day. And that really was what put Barack Obama over the top, even before we started counting the votes from South Dakota and Montana, and put him where he is now, which he's about 35 over the necessary minimum of 2,118, and on his way up to 2,200 and on his way up probably to 2,250 before he's done.
I just asked Congresswoman Waters about people from the Congressional Black Caucus and other superdelegates who, in the 11th hour, did either switch their affiliation or announce their affiliation. What's in it for the superdelegates to kind of throw their support in at the very last minute?
You heard Congresswoman Waters a moment ago referring to her own campaign that had her in Los Angeles yesterday. Let's not forget that every single superdelegate who is a member of the House, and that's, I think, 235, 236 Democrats in the House now, each one of those superdelegates is also a person who's on the ballot in November. Unless they're retiring this year, every House member must run every 2 years. And even if they've got a pretty safe district, even if they're pretty sure they're going to do all right, you know, the people who stick around in Congress are the ones who never stop campaigning, never forget that they've got to be on the ballot every other November. And those people are looking at these two candidates and they're saying to themselves, in the end, which way do I do better? Which way am I closer to my constituents? Which way do I build the Democratic Party of tomorrow so that my own political future will be secure?
We saw all three of the candidates, Senator Clinton, who has not dropped out, Senator McCain, presumptive Republican nominee, Senator Obama, presumptive Democratic nominee, all speaking today at a function concerning Israel and Jewish American issues. What's the importance of them all being at a big event like that and making, news at the same time?
Well, AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, is the most important of several lobbying organizations that try to keep the interests of Israel constantly before the eyes of powerful people in America, including, of course, members of Congress, members of the administration. It has been highly influential for many years in both political parties. There may have been a time when people associated it primarily with Democrats, but in recent decades, increasingly, the support for Israel has been very strong in the Republican Party. And so in recent years, you've seen members of the Bush administration and powerful people from Capitol Hill on the Republican side being the featured speakers at these meetings of AIPAC that happen each year. This year, though, clearly the presidential candidates stole the show. John McCain gave a well-received speech. Barack Obama did as well. And Hillary Clinton, whom you would think would probably have been the person who was closest to many of those in the audience in terms of her political interests and her political history. She is the, of course, senator from New York. You would have thought that she really would have been the capstone on this meeting, and she would have had the biggest and strongest response. I don't think it was that simple at all. They seemed to listen to all three presidential candidates with about equal interest.
All right. Last, and, you know, it's so much to cover, but only just give us a teaser. What's next for Senator Clinton?
Senator Clinton is showing signs of being very interested in having the second slot on the ticket. Whether or not ultimately she really wants to be vice president, I think she wants to have the salute that goes with having that job offered, even if she chooses not to take it. And perhaps there would be good reasons for her to go either way. She would like to have the salute to her efforts and her constituencies that's implied by the offer.
Does that salute include money?
Well, she does have a campaign debt. I don't think that it's a crippling debt, and the Clintons have their own ability to either cover that debt or to raise money on their own, but they do need to get that money raised by the end of the summer. Otherwise, it's not going to be retirable under the current fundraising rules. So she needs to get it done soon, and she could use some help with that. Barack Obama could provide that support with his online fundraising base of 1.5 million contributors.
All right, Ron. Thanks again.
Always a pleasure, Farai.
Ron Elving is NPR's senior Washington editor. He spoke to us from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C. And just ahead, political analysts Ron Walters and Robert George give us their take on the presidential race. And on our bloggers' roundtable, the sons of Confederate veterans want to fly the world's largest Confederate flag by a Florida highway. They have the permits to do it, but did they withhold information to get approval? This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The wait is over.
Tonight, I can stand here and say that I will be the Democratic nominee for the President of the United States of America.
After 6 months of primaries, caucuses, debates, and endless campaigning, Senator Barack Obama is the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. We still have to use the word presumptive because, though he has enough delegates to make the nomination, he hasn't gotten the official party nomination yet. Senator Obama seems destined to go down in the history books as the first African-American nominee of a major political party. Now he's got to face the presumptive Republican nominee, John McCain. And what about Senator Hillary Clinton? She hasn't announced her next move. For more on the scramble to the White House, we have two of our political gurus. Ron Walters is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. He's also author of Freedom Is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. Plus, we've got Robert George, associate editorial page editor for the New York Post. Hi, gentlemen.
Hey there.
How are you, Fry?
I'm doing great. So, you know, it's over, or maybe it's just beginning. Barack Obama is the presumptive Democratic nominee for the 2008 presidential race. Ron, you worked on Reverend Jackson's 1984 and 88 campaigns. What were you feeling when you saw Obama give his victory speech last night?
Well, I thought that it was the fruition of what we had done, and not just us, going all the way back to Fannie Lou Hamer and her tremendous speech at the Democratic Convention in 1964, but coming up through Shirley Chisholm and all of the people who contributed to this. And I think that we haven't really talked enough about that foundation, because it is that that really yielded Barack Obama. But certainly it was a moment of feeling that the hard work that we put into two campaigns in 84 and 88 had borne fruit.
Robert, today Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice called Obama's nomination an extraordinary development for the United States. Even for people who don't have a Democratic Party affiliation, do you think that there's a sense of pride among many people who are Republicans, independents, et cetera?
Oh yeah, without question. I certainly feel that. I certainly feel that way myself. Obama is we're part of the same generation. I was born in Trinidad. Grew up with my mother. Lived with actually a foster white family in England for a few years as well. So much of Obama's biography resonates with me personally and with others of my generation. That regardless of where we are politically, it's still a wonderful chapter in the ongoing American story, and it's fantastic to see this.
All right. Well, the Democrats have their presumptive nominee, but Senator Hillary Clinton is kind of playing her cards close to the vest on what her next move is. Let's listen to some of what she said last night.
You have voted because you wanted to take back the White House, and because of you, we won together the swing states necessary to get to 270 electoral votes.
Okay, when you listen to that, what do you think? I mean, Ron, when you listen to that, who is she at this point? I mean, is she a person who's waiting for instructions? Is she someone who's about to give some orders? What are you hearing?
She's in a negotiating framework. I remember when we, 84 and 88, lost. Both Michael Dukakis and Mondale thought we ought to go home, sit down in the corner. We said no. With the political resources that we have, we're going to use them to negotiate. And that's exactly what she's doing. She is saying, in effect, I want 18 million votes, tremendous political resource. And with that, I am going to build a credibility case now, not just for the presidency, but also for what comes now. And as a matter of fact, in that speech, she even asked people to call in, email her, let her know what they are thinking. Well, this is the start of another kind of campaign, and she's trying to build credibility for whatever it is she wants.
Robert, some folks say an Obama-Clinton ticket could seal the White House for the Democrats. 36 million people voted in the Democratic primaries and contest. But it could also have a lot of negatives, an Obama-Clinton ticket. And now even former President Jimmy Carter told an audience in England that it would be a mistake for Obama to pick Clinton as his VP. He said, quote, that would just accumulate the negative aspects of both candidates. Why don't you break down what you think the pros and cons of an Obama-Clinton ticket would be?
Yeah, this may be one of those cases where a stop clock is right once, and I think Jimmy Carter is actually right here. Obviously, one of the pros is, as Ron just mentioned, she has 18 million supporters. She's made a case that she won the popular vote amongst the Democratic primaries, particularly her base is a part of the country and voters that Obama needs in terms of blue collar voters, white voters, white women, and so forth. So those are the pros. The con is, and I guess I couldn't, given that Hillary Clinton's talking about this, a con is the correct phrase. Is number one is a lot of the baggage that comes with that. There is a large segment of this country that does not trust Bill and Hillary either separately or together, and I think actually that part of the country has expanded now to roughly half of the Democratic Party. And part of Barack Obama's message is about change and turning the page on the past. And I think for a lot of voters, Democrats and Republicans, part of that change means enough of this Bush-Clinton stuff. And I think that by putting her on the ticket, that really undercuts a really major section of his rhetorical attraction.
Now, let me go back to you, Ron. There is another statement that really kind of touched some people. BET founder Bob Johnson says he's going to try to make the Congressional Black Caucus lobby for an Obama-Clinton ticket. He's been a staunch Clinton supporter. First of all, does he have a prayer of getting what he wants? And secondly, what does it say about sort of differences of opinion among African Americans?
Well, I think that's going to be a hard sell for Bob. I think that, number one, he lacks the credibility to make that case. I mean, you go back in the campaign and look at the statements that he's made. I doubt if they're the kind of statements that members of the Congressional Black Caucus would listen to or take seriously. except for the people already in the caucus who support Hillary Clinton. So I think that he's not going to be that successful. In addition to that, I think given what has happened in terms of all of the racial comments made coming out of the Clinton campaign.
Absolutely.
African Americans probably would be loath to have her on the ticket. As a matter of fact, people have asked me, well, do you think that these attitudes are going to be permanent? Yes, I think they're going to be permanent unless they can arrange some form of restitution. And I don't know whether or not this gives them that opportunity or not, but certainly there's tremendous deep emotion in the black community now about the Clintons.
And that, you know, that speaks to the point that that President Carter made about rather than combining their strengths, a ticket could may actually combine some of these hostilities, because for a lot of the white voters that might be brought in by Hillary Clinton, there might be a lot of black voters who are obviously still going to support Obama, but really would be turned off and feel like that you're in a sense rewarding somebody who tried to belittle you and is making allusions to assassination comments just a week ago.
Well, let me ask you this. This is an incredibly important question, Robert. You know how there's, you know, the Clinton, Bill Clinton office is up in Harlem. Do you think that he's going to be able to go to Sylvia's and get the same plate of beans?
It is very funny that you ask that, because one of my colleagues at the Post is a features writer, and there was a big event at the Apollo the other day, and she was asking people to ask some questions about some of the people who were attending, Denzel Washington, Spike Lee, and so forth. And one of the questions I sent to the reporter was, I said, well, see if you can track down Spike or one of them and ask, if Bill goes into the Apollo, what's the response going to be now? And I think it's an open question, because even though on election day, on primary day in New York, Harlem actually did go narrowly for Hillary Clinton, the hometown girl, as it was, that has changed since in those intervening months, and the African American community in Harlem is, I think, really upset genuinely with what Bill and Hillary have pulled. So Bill might want to get a food taster when he goes into Sylvia's.
Uh-oh. Well, you know, that lightning has struck, because I was in Sylvia's last week and asked that question.
Oh, there you go.
And there was a woman sitting next to me eating, and I asked her, have you seen Bill? And we're joking, because I heard them talking about the campaign. And she said, no, and he better not show his face around here.
Well, you know, when you knew it was all over when Toni Morrison rejected his ghetto pass to being the first black president. So I think he's got a lot of bridges to rebuild.
All right. Well, let's turn for a second to Senator John McCain. You can't count him out. He is the presumptive Republican nominee. And in some ways, he's been overshadowed in the media because the Democratic primary race continued. Now he is front and center, and with an unpopular war, low ratings for the current president, it should seem to some analysts like the Democrats could walk away with this election. But you shouldn't count him out. Right, Robert?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll get into both of you just
quickly. That is quite right. I mean, I think one thing that the Republicans don't have a lot going for them in this campaign, but one thing that they do have going is they nominated the best Republican to play in this environment. He's somebody who has a history of not bowing to the party line. There's a long history of his tension with the current he could actually put on his own T-shirt saying, you know, that I was disliking George W. Bush before disliking George W. Bush was cool, kind of thing. So he's got that going for him. He also was the only Republican in the field who, you know, really stared back on the whole anti-immigration aspect. So he has credibility in terms of going to in the Latino community, which frankly also came out in the primary, is not quite yet, you know, taken in by Barack Obama. So McCain does have a few strengths that he can play.
Let me, Ron, before we get to you, let me play you a little bit of the back and forth between these two candidates. Here's McCain and Obama.
Americans ought to be concerned about the judgment of a presidential candidate who says he's ready to talk in person and without conditions with tyrants from Havana to Pyongyang, but hasn't traveled to Iraq to meet with General Petraeus and see for himself the progress he threatens to reverse.
John McCain has spent a lot of time talking about trips to Iraq in the last few weeks. But maybe if he spent some time taking trips to the cities and towns that have been hardest hit by this economy, cities in Michigan and Ohio and right here in Minnesota, he'd understand the kind of change that people are looking for.
Ron, what do you think is going to go down in terms of strategies that these two men have to tackle each other?
Well, I think that this is going to be between the two of them, if you let it happen, a debate about foreign policy, because McCain thinks that that's his strength. And all of a sudden, Barack Obama is released from having to deal with a woman to whom he had to give a lot of deference and respect to really now tackle John McCain. I think that if you listen to John McCain's speech last night, you didn't hear much new. As a matter of fact, in some respects, I was told by some people he sounded like a Democrat. There were no new ideas there. He seemed to be parroting Democratic themes on energy and the environment and so forth. And that was amazing to me because it seemed to me I was asking myself, how is this going to play among his base? Probably not very well.
All right, I have to go. I hear Robert chuckling.
I was just going to chuckle. I just wanted to quote Ron Walters saying that John McCain had no new ideas. He was just parroting Democratic themes.
Uh-oh.
That was a great statement, which I think we may need to start spreading
around
to those Republicans.
All right, okay, guys. Well, on that note, that's all we have time for. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Take care, Ron.
Okay, Robert George is Associate Editorial Page Editor for the New York Post. He spoke with us from the NPR studios in New York. And Ron Walters is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. He's also the author of Freedom is Not Enough, Black Voters, Black Candidates, and American Presidential Politics. Barack Obama is now the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party, and you have been on our blog, News and Views, sharing your election analysis. For more, we've got our News and Notes web producer, Jeffrey Bennett. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Farai.
So, last night, Barack Obama got enough delegates to become the Democratic nominee presumptively for president. How are people breaking that down on our blog?
Well, on our blog, Dan Jones wrote, "I was glad to be a witness to history being made, even if it was slightly marred by Hillary Clinton's refusal to read the writing on the wall and get out of the race." And Glenda Fraser wrote, "It was America's moment, period." Now, the big Obama story on our blog up to this point was his decision to leave his church, Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. And on that, there was no consensus among our readers.
Now, we also started a new online series featuring submissions from our political contributors. So what's that?
Yeah, it's called Political Positions. And each week, one of our regular political contributors weighs in with their take on the week's news. We started with a piece from Mark Sawyer about John McCain's stance on relations with Cuba, followed that with an open letter to Barack Obama written by Ron Walters about how to handle the white working class vote. And now we have a piece from James L. Taylor parsing the support among black and white voters for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So some interesting perspectives that people should take time out to read.
Of course, Ron was just on our air. Yeah. So what else has got people talking this week?
Well, remember those crazy Coogee sweaters Bill Cosby used to wear in The Cosby Show?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they can be yours for the low, low price of $5,000. He's auctioning them off on eBay to raise money for the foundation named after his late son, and the opening bid is $5,000 per sweater. So you can,
I know that you're going to be sporting one next week,
I will.
Right?
I will. The acrylic and the applique and the nonsense. But you can take a look at some of his greatest Coogee hits and misses at our blog, nprnewsandviews.org.
Okay. So we always mention our web address, but where else can folks find us online?
Well, we're on Facebook.com, as we've mentioned before. We're also on BET.com now. People can check us out at BET.com/news and click on NPR Hear It First. And our coverage is also on AOL Black Voices on their Black Spin blog. Say that three times fast. And links to all of that are on our website.
And I also put a shout out on our blog for L.A. listeners. There are a lot of people here in L.A. where we are produced in Culver City, but we don't air here, and we love you. I just ran into somebody this weekend who listened to the show and have done it many times. So we are trying to build a critical mass of people, and I promise you punch and pie, just like they say on South Park. So, how are we trying to disseminate that message?
Well, if people stream our show on the website or podcast us and don't listen to us on the radio, come on over to our blog and tell us about it. Tell us about their experience, and we'd love to hear from them.
That's right. All right. Jeff Bennett, thank you.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Bennett is the web producer for News and Notes, and he joined me from our studios at NPR West. Next on News and Notes, should the sons of the Confederate veterans be able to fly a huge Confederate flag near one of Florida's busiest highways? and the legacy of rock and roll great Bo Diddley. We'll have that and more on our Bloggers Roundtable. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. If you're a blogger right now, you're probably in your happy place. What to talk about next? The presidential race, legends of black music, or the latest cultural controversies? We've got plenty on all these fronts in our Bloggers Roundtable. With us, pop culture critic Desmond Burton of the blog Afro Nerd, Baratunde Thurston, he's a blogger for sites including The Huffington Post, and Carmen Dixon. She writes the blog All About Race and also blogs for AOL Black Voices. Hey, folks.
Good morning.
Hello. Hey, Farai.
So, as we've been saying, Obama has pretty much locked up the nomination, and this is a historic election. So, Baratunde, let me start with you. You know, what did you know and when did you know it? Meaning, how closely did you watch things unfold and you know, watch the speeches, and how did you feel?
I feel great. I feel like Yes We Can became Yes We Did in at least phase one of this operation to get someone of Obama's caliber and background into the White House. I followed everything. I watched all the speeches. I was thrilled to see McCain's speech cut off by the networks. And I think that was a metaphor that McCain's time is up and Obama and our time is now for the entire season that we're entering in.
Carmen, what about you? How did, you know, on an emotional level?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I'm thrilled about his success, but the post that I'm writing right now is called Happy, Excited, Dread. Dread meaning that we have a lot of work to do to get him elected. He is my candidate. I am supporting Barack Obama, but I know the kind of work it's going to take on the ground and having one-on-one conversations and moving people's opinions to even consider voting for him, because I know a lot of people are not even considering it right now.
Desmond, what are you hearing? You know, tell us your thoughts on this historic moment, but also what are you hearing about whether it's, you know, challenges in the upcoming general election, dislike of, you know, any candidates from different voters? Kind of what's your ear to the ground?
Well, I guess it's the inevitability of the entire factor. You know, one major thing I think is Hillary Clinton's reaction to the whole thing, her disingenuous demeanor. The fact that it's a reality. It seems like she just didn't want to be gracious about it. And you were able to see just how presidential Obama came across in his delivery. And he was so deferential to her, and yet she could not reciprocate that. So I think what's really being talked about is, will he choose her as a VP? Should he choose her as a VP? Maybe she's going to wedge herself into that. My own personal preference would probably be Bloomberg, as a bulletproof vest of sorts. That's like an inside joke to some of my Jewish colleagues. But again, I think that there's a lot of work to be done, as Shay has, she sounds like Shay. The young lady's
Carmen.
Carmen just referenced that there's a lot of work to go forward. And I think there's going to be some problems. And hopefully, you know, that scared me a little bit.
Well, and I think that, you know, speaking of presidential, what amazed me is that this morning, President Bush congratulated Senator Obama on clinching the nomination, yet candidate Clinton couldn't do the same. And you know it's right. A dark day when a Bush has got a better grip on reality than a Clinton.
Yeah. Well, Carmen, you know, I saw you making a face when it came up whether or not there will be an Obama-Clinton ticket. There have been a lot of discussion about whether or not it would be a pro or a con, and former President Jimmy Carter says no, bad idea. What do you think?
Well, I think at the heart of it, it's simple. She can't be on the ticket because Obama is about change. And if he's true, and if he's going to stay true to his message, to his brand, bringing in on Hillary Clinton is not about change. It's about more of the same. That's what he campaigned on this entire season. So to make a U-turn on that, it would certainly alienate me.
Well, Baratunde, though, what about the idea that it is change, but too much change, in a country that has historically been governed by white men since day one at the executive branch level, to have both a black man and a white woman on the same ticket, would that kind of, you know, kill any chances for most of the white male vote?
I think that's really a secondary issue. And in many cases, both Obama and Clinton have transcended their demographics. They are super strong and powerful brands. And there are reasons well beyond her being a white female that Clinton represents
a pretty bad choice for him. The behavior of her and her campaign throughout this season has crossed several lines of, you know, difficult to impossible to forgive. The baggage that she and Bill Clinton bring back to the White House that hasn't fully been vetted, whether it's his overseas business connections or exactly what his role is going to be, it creates a really powerful get-out-the-vote machine for the Republicans, who already are warming up to taking on Obama and have been waiting in the wings for another shot at Clinton. So for those reasons alone, outside of the minor policy differences and the strong personality differences, I think they're much stronger than the demographic concerns that you just raised.
Desmond, what about ideas and issues? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about things like change or firsts and you know, first black, first woman, et cetera. But when it comes down to it, you've got a country that's dealing with $4+ a gallon for gas, the, you know, billions of dollars in debt that we've accumulated, the war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is time for heavy lifting. What would you like to hear from the candidates at this point?
Well, I'd like to hear some substance, some really, from what I've, from my understanding, Obama is somewhat of a policy wonk, but we've never been able to really vet that out because we've been focused so much on race and sex, or sexism, if anything. At least that's what Hillary led us to believe, like us to believe that it's about sexism. Honestly, I think that if these two can get beyond some of the being pitted against each other as far as their respective demographics, maybe we could see some of these issues come forward. But right now, as you just stated, this is going to be an ultimate litmus test to see if it's going to be about dealing with the economic issues domestically as opposed to dealing with the color of his skin.
And I think he said, he laid down the gauntlet last night in a pretty positive way when he said, neither this campaign nor this party will use religion as a wedge, will try to beat our opponents over the head over patriotism. We're Americans before, we're Republicans and Democrats, and sort of inviting McCain and welcoming a true policy debate. He said it's something that the people deserve, and I happen to believe it's something that the people deserve, and I think he believes it too. So I look forward to getting into the meat of those policy differences.
I look forward to that, but I have to tell you, I think it's aspirational. I think this campaign, right through November, is going to be plagued with a lot of identity politics, whether it's done by 527s, whether it's done by spokespeople or allies of the candidates. I think you're going to still see some things that you're going to see some dirty pull.
Well, how about this? What about the other side of it, which is, you know, someone was saying to me the other day that they thought that Senator Obama could not campaign on the issues because he was the magical African-American friend. And that's a phrase that a writer, Christopher John Farley of Time, wrote once. But it's like this whole idea of, like, you know, in the buddy movie where you've got the black buddy and it's like, he's my black friend, but he's such a nice guy. He's not like all those other black people. And it, you know, to a certain extent, if Senator Obama rolls up his sleeves and starts, you know, taking some hard shots, will he ruin, Carmen, this idea of the magical African-American friend?
Well, I wrote about that very early in his campaign, so I agree with you 100%. But the tricky thing is now walking that line between explaining his policies and keeping people comfortable that he's not too strong, which is a very hard line for an African American man to walk.
Let me turn to another issue, a cultural issue. One of the things that's come up as this campaign unfolds is the question of where are we? Where are we as a nation on the issue of race? Do we have, you know, more cross-racial friendships but not racial justice in systems like, you know, the justice system? Now there's a controversy. It is about a symbol, but symbols can be powerful. There's the giant Confederate flag that might go above the tree line near Tampa. There's a group called the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and they want to put a 30-foot-high, 50-foot-long flag atop a 139-foot pole. It would be the world's largest Confederate flag. The local NAACP is not happy about it, and some local business owners as well are not feeling great about it. Now, Baratunde, at this point in time, you've got an African-American man who has all but clinched the presidential nomination of a major party for the first time. And then you also have this symbol, which means different things to different people, looking like it's going to go up at any moment. What does that say about the differing strains of culture in America today?
Well, I think it says that there's never a simple story that explains this country. And to use Carmen's phrase, aspirational, America likes to promote that aspirational brand, but the reality is a lot more nuanced and often a lot dirtier, darker, and uglier than that. I think in the case of the Confederate flag, I don't have too much to say about it. You have, you know, we're here at the very beginning of the 21st century, and you've got a group of people who want to take us back to the 19th. And they might as well raise a flag for child labor or bloodletting via leeches or eugenics diagram. There's that particular yep. symbol is just so removed that it's not part of the legitimate, I think, level of conversation, but it does represent, you know, some aspects of society that we'd rather not focus on.
Hey, look, I've driven across the country twice. And let me tell you, you know, when you're driving through the South, the Deep South, and you see nothing but Confederate bumper stickers, yeah. it's not just a symbol. It breathes, you know. So Desmond, I mean, it is a symbol, but at the same time, we live and die by symbolism. And
it is a message.
It is a message, Carmen. So, you know, do you think at this point, often, as things change, some people become fearful and there's a backlash. Mm-hmm. Will there be a backlash that comes out of this Democratic nomination, presumptive?
100%. I happened to be working in a polling place yesterday for our elections here, and I was cut off from cell phone and internet contact, but all of a sudden, people got very angry. It was a predominantly white precinct, and the tone changed late afternoon, our time here in LA, and I heard a number of comments about Barack Obama, about switching party to Republican from Democrat, I'll never be Democrat again, to the degree that I had to check a couple people, because there's no electioneering, of course, while people are trying to vote. But I felt it. I felt it up close and personal. So yes, the backlash is arriving.
How do you think it's going to play out, Desmond?
Well, I know in my fantasy, I would like to see more African-Americans go towards the right or even towards the center. And the reason why I say that is because, listen, there's a book out called Wrong on Race, The Democratic Party's Buried Past by Bruce Bartlett. And he talks about this whole antebellum history of the Democratic Party and their adherence to apartheid in this country and to Jim Crow laws. So, I mean, the bottom line is the Republicans did not hold a candle to the Democrats as far as their history when it comes down to racism. So now we're starting to see some of these things. And I think that it's time for black folk to become more more intelligent about their vote.
Well, I can agree with you on the more intelligent and even more independent about that vote, though our prescription for where that leads might go somewhere different. I agree with Carmen. It's going to get ugly. We've seen hints of it. I think the Clintons did us a favor, but with some of their tactics by kind of warming
Absolutely.
Us up and preparing us for what the people, what certain citizens will respond with, and how, most importantly to me, how the media is so unprepared, dangerously so, to moderate this conversation at any point, much less during a political campaign.
Well, all right,
I did want to say one thing that in some ways Clinton did allow Obama to get some battle scars. Perhaps he needed that. And also to quote Father Flager's friend, the chickens have come home to roost. So again, I mean, you know, this is, we've seen this before. So I mean, I'm not shocked.
All right. Well, I want to move on to one last topic. It's sad in one way, but inspirational in another. And I'm talking about the passing of rock pioneer Bo Diddley. He left behind a legacy in rock and roll that has touched, you know, hundreds, if not thousands. Well, probably, I'm sure thousands, if not millions of people. And so we actually spoke with Rob Fields, a pop culture expert and blogger, and here's part of what he said on how Bo Diddley affected black musicians.
One of the things that Bo Diddley represented was this artist who was very clear from the beginning that he wanted to do his own thing and have his own sound. He was clear that he did not want to sound like anyone else. That's what black rock artists in the largest sense of the term have always been about, sort of exploring their own personal taste, but filtering it certainly through, you know, a black cultural sensitivity.
Desmond, what did he mean to you? I mean, do you see him as one of the people who really blazed a trail in rock and roll?
Definitely. Bo Diddley, even the recent passing of Ike Turner. I mean, aside from Ike Turner's dysfunctional other things going on in his life, he was still a phenomenal artist. Even he was, I guess, noted for the first rock and roll record, Rocket 88. It bothers me as to how the music scene right now is and how we just do not have enough musicianship in the African-American community that's being highlighted. So I'd like to see, matter of fact, for Afro Nerd Radio, which is the blog, the podcast version of AfroNerd.com, I'm going to be interviewing Danielia Cotton, who does a really excellent version of AC/DC's Back in Black, which I guess is kind of a double entendre in some ways. But she's an excellent artist. I would like to see her promote it more. And I think we need to see more. Just Obama, again, going back to this, to what he represents, we need to see more different aspects of black life and not just seeing everything all about hip hop and, again, getting back into some true musicianship. So hopefully we will see that his legacy will continue.
You know, Carmen, I know that you used to DJ and may once again, but there's a whole black rock movement. And in the 80s, the Black Rock Coalition was formed. And there have been so many musicians that have been format breakers, like Vernon Reed, Grace Jones, who's one of my favorites, Prince, Fishbone, mm-hmm. you know, on and on and on. Do you see a diversity in African-American music right now?
Not as much as I'd like to see, but I know there's a country artist. I can't recall her name right now, but there's a
Reese Palmer.
That's
and
Reese
we interviewed
Palmer.
Her.
Yes, and I've heard her CD and I love it. So it's there, and I think Desmond makes a great point about promoting these artists, and I don't think there are ready channels to promote them. So maybe that's up to us bloggers to help create those channels and push them forward.
All right, we're going to have to end it there. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Baratunde Thurston. He blogs at the Huffington Post and Jack and Jill Politics, plus pop culture critic Desmond Burton of the blog Afro Nerd. Both were at our New York studios, and media consultant Carmen Dixon. She writes the blog All About Race and also blogs at AOL Black Voices. She was here with me at our NPR West studios. And you can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop there. Our online series Speak Your Mind gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind. That's our show for today. Thanks for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, the world has been fascinated by this year's American presidential race, but what do black Europeans think of it? We'll talk to some about their perspective from abroad.